What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. Larry Rifkin along with John Krofcik. And John, of course you remember this song, Frank Sinatra, Regrets. I've had a few.
Oh, yeah, that's a great song.
But then too few to mention. Oh, no. Oh, no, not me. I did
way.
It.
Yeah. Nice
My
song.
Way. Who wrote that song? Come on, you're
oh,
now.
Oh, I know this.
Come
I know
on.
This. Tony Bennett.
Uncorrect.
Incorrect.
Incorrect.
Oh, who was it?
See, even incorrect was not uncorrect. It's incorrect. It's still incorrect.
It's Frank Paul Anka.
Paul Anka. Anka.
Okay. I knew okay. I had it there somewhere.
Right. You had it right back there in the old cerebellum somewhere. Well, how many of you listening to us now can say, oh, no, not me. I did it my way. Now, John, I know so many people. Honest to goodness, really, who regret one decision or another. If you really stop, and here we are in our 60s now, and we start thinking back and, gee, did I make this choice? Was it proper? Did I really take that opportunity to really go for it when I had that option in my career? Or was I too safe? Or did I not move when I could have? I had a great opportunity across the country, and I was just a little scared to do it. Yeah. Do you talk to people when they...
I find myself even, and now that I have a grandchild, wondering, you know, did I really spend as much time with my kids as I should have because we were working
Well, that's
so
one
hard.
Of the regrets that a lot of
you
people
know,
have.
I think I made a lot of mistakes there, but, you know, you're working, you're trying to pay the bills, you got kids. I mean, so that's one thing I sort of wonder about. But they turned out okay.
Well, you're not, yeah. Oh, no, you got good kids, and I do too. But I mean, that's one of the things that I think a lot of people regret, that they worked way too much.
Yeah, clearly. Work was more of a priority than.
But really, when you think about it, go back through old pictures, and you'll see that we're actually in a few of them at parties and
that's true.
Such. So we must have been there. But the problem is with our memories, who can remember? But it can get rather maudlin and sad when you really go back and say, boy, did I take a wrong turn. Yeah. And I'll say this, you and I think, can both say that we were in the careers that we really did want.
That's true.
We didn't settle. We didn't accept. We didn't say, well, look, for the sake of security and money and opportunity, we're not going to pursue our own dreams. I mean, we've been in this broadcast field our entire lives. Yeah. And honestly, that I don't regret. I really don't.
No, I don't regret anything I've done there. I just, like I said, I think I just regret I spent too much time sometimes doing work when I should have been home doing other things.
Well, at least, though, most of our careers were built in a period before they could get you 24-7.
That's right. That's
before
true.
You were totally attached. And I can only imagine today a young person in a highly skilled area with lots of demands, and they're
imagine
getting
24
hit.
Hours a day.
Exactly.
You get email,
exactly.
text.
Exactly.
Oh,
so at least we didn't suffer through that. Well, I saw this very interesting group. A research group, and go online, folks, and find them. It's called Study Finds, FINDS.org. And Steve Fink is one of the principals there. And when I saw the research from this group, what they do is they harness and they publish really interesting studies from around the globe. And this one that caught my attention was that 40% of us, that's 4 in 10, have a lot of regrets about the decisions that they've made in their lives.
Wow.
So at first I thought about it, John, and I said, 4 in 10. And then I thought about it and I said, that's low. I think there's about 6 or 7
well,
in
that's
10.
That's true.
I mean, really, yeah, in a weird yeah. way. I mean, we were just talking to a friend of ours who, well, he was married and then divorced, never had brought his full family together until a daughter's wedding just last week. And he was saying, that his wife married four times. I mean, his ex-wife.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she passed and so forth. But, I mean, you think about it. Wow, there are so many tripwires in this lifetime.
Oh, yes. Wow. I never even thought about that until you mentioned it just now.
So 4 in 10, is that high? Is that low? Well, these regrets, of course, can be big ones or small ones or just ones that seem to come back and haunt us. It doesn't mean that we all have the same types of regrets. I mean, it's not like, well, I regret it. I didn't, you know, go skiing on a vacation.
Right.
I mean,
there
are those. Right. And then there are those about big life's choices. And I've got to say, you and I are still together with our starter wives. I hope our ending wives.
Hopefully.
And we're still in love. I mean, we're very fortunate in many ways.
We are. I know. I wouldn't change anything to what's happened, you know, in my life. I mean, I'm very happy.
But I think it's a good topic to explore.
Yes.
And, you know, now that we're part of the Mental Health News Radio Network, you know, we still dig into all the hard topics politically and socially, but we also from time to time like to step off and look at, well, this is a trend. In other words, this is what people today are feeling about what they did and how they go about the rest of their lives, knowing that there were certain things that they wish they could have gotten back, and how they live the remainder of their lives is a really important one. And for those young people who like to listen to America Trends, well, think about what it is that we've learned along this path, and maybe we can help you to think about how you can make the next 30, 40, 50 years really even more enjoyable with no regrets at the end of the line.
Wow, that would be something if we could do that.
Well, let's try.
Okay.
Steve Fink joins us for a very interesting, very personal conversation about regrets.
With me on the line is Steve Fink from a group called StudyFinds.org. First of all, Steve Fink, tell me what StudyFinds is.
Sure. So StudyFinds is a website that speaks to the many studies, surveys, general research that we see very frequently on television, in magazines, in newspapers. We often see studies being cited and quoted, ranging from anything from health, diet, to tips on how to live your life. And we see these studies popping up very frequently, and so we created Study Finds to give folks a place, a kind of general hub for these studies that are kind of geared towards the mass population. I mean, there are dozens of studies being released every day by research institutions. Many of them are very scientific in nature, but may have a very general, you know, focus that speaks to many people, to millions of people in, you know, whether it's in the United States or across the world. And so we wanted to create a place that offers some of the more mass audience studies and surveys that are released each day and feature some of the best ones that we think speak to a general population.
Oh, I think it's interesting. I always click on those 4 in 10 XYZ or what have you. How do we know that they are empirically appropriate, that somebody's really doing the rigorous examination, so we're not just getting kind of pulled into a headline?
Sure. So that's always important. I think when you do read these studies, you'll often notice many of them will cite scientific journals that they are published in. Typically, you want a study to have been published in a peer-reviewed journal. That just goes to show you that it was performed, you know, by an accredited university usually, or some sort of organization that is generally respected for whatever form of science they study or do research for. You know, you want to look for those types of things. You want to see that they have used large samples. You know, sometimes a study might only include 6 to 10 people, and that doesn't give you a very good glimpse in what those results might be. But some of these studies involve results of 10 to 100,000 people. And of course, that's definitely a better sample to have an idea that the information and the findings that they are choosing to release are legitimate findings and may actually mean something to you.
Exactly. And what you referenced before about 6 people is more like a focus group than a study.
Yes, exactly.
But with that said, we've done a number of them on our podcast. We did one with a professor from England who told us that we were getting lazier as a cohort. And he had a lot of studies to back it up in terms of physical exertion exercise and the like. We did one recently about how pop songs are getting angrier and sadder. And I think people are really interested to see, because maybe they sense something and yet they'd love to have it validated by actual research and science. Is that what you find a lot of your study readers are looking for? They say, yeah, you know, I thought about that, and you're just validating what it is I was thinking.
Yeah, it's always interesting to read the comments and the responses from folks who come on our site. You know, we've only been in existence for about 2.5 years, published about a little more than 2,000 studies. It's always interesting to see the response. Sometimes you do get that, I never knew that, or I always thought about that, or the me too, you know, I agree, that's how I live. And then you get a lot of folks who often respond with, why are they studying this? Or who's spending money on this? Which is always funny to read. But it is interesting because, you know, there are things that they seem so trivial, but they've never been validated. And so why do we study them? We study them to validate them. We study them to prove that those things you walk around thinking that might sit in the back of your mind are real, and that other people act the same way or think the same way. And so that is why they spend the money to do these types of things that may seem so off the wall.
Before we get into the meat of why we brought you here today, Steve, there's this one other element. I know when we see certain studies, let me give a really banal one, but
sure.
If I read that 5 in 10 people who whiten their teeth say that improves their life. And
right.
People might say, well, who funded that?
Exactly.
And was it Crest? Was it Colgate? In other words, people wondering if there was a commercial interest lying deep beneath the surface on something like that.
Sure, there are certainly plenty of studies, and even ones that we publish, and we try and be careful about the ones that we do publish. But the ones that are often funded by you know, popular companies are tend to be more survey based. But you know, we see those very frequently. That there are major brands who are launching studies or surveys, and you know, even though they might be funded by, you know, whether Crest or another toothpaste brand is. You know, sponsoring a dental-related study, that doesn't necessarily mean that the results will be skewed. You know, typically what you'll see there is those brands are hiring, you know, an independent company. There are many out there that will do the research, that will survey however many people they choose to survey, and then present the results back to the brand. Of course, then it's up to the brand to be honest in how they report those findings. But generally, you know, those brands are often using legitimate, you know, companies and independent resources to do those surveys. Sometimes there will be ones where you'll see a food, you know, let's just take the Green Pepper Association of America. I'm just going to make that up. You know, the Green Pepper Association of America may choose to do a study on green peppers and how they make people happier. May want to question those results a little bit more. But if you do see that the results come from an independent, you know, research facility, they do carry a bit more water.
Yeah, there are those, you know, when we go back, though, to the merchants of death concept, where the tobacco industry used to put out all kinds of findings about the healthy attributes of tobacco.
Exactly.
And now, of course, with vaping and such, I think when something's kind of new or something is being attacked in the media, whenever you see a study, it might be good to look behind who is studying it. But today, we're not really talking about anything that I think anyone can quibble with. But there might be people out there who are going to say, honestly, about the topic we're about to engage in, that maybe the numbers are even low, and I hate to think that. But what caught my eye with study finds is that 4 out of 10 adults regret their life choices. Now, I found this very interesting because I know so many people who got into careers, and they did it because, well, maybe they were chasing the dollar, or when they got out of high school or college, it was what was available, and they just stayed on that track, and they didn't ask a lot of questions, kept their head down, and stayed in a lane. And then they look up 20 years later and said, why did I do this? Or, you know, shouldn't I have pursued that dream that I had when I was a kid? And they have some regrets about it.
This was a study that I agree. I think the numbers, because it's right in the middle, they might seem understandable. But sure, I think, you know, this was a survey that that surveyed 2,000 adults in the United Kingdom. Didn't give the age range, so that could be anybody 18 or over. I'd like to think that this study did choose folks who are tend to be at least 30 years old, so they have lived a little bit of life to feel some regret for. But yeah, they found that 4 in 10 regret the aspects of their lives, certain aspects of their lives, not necessarily their entire life. But yeah, that's to your point exactly. I think many of us walk around and we often do the coulda, woulda, shoulda, and you know, we're often posed that question of, if I could go back and change something, would you? And I think I would have guessed that twice this amount, I would say 8 in 10 people would say, yeah, I would. I made that one bad decision, and if I could have that one back and get that mulligan, sure, I would.
Well, you know, somebody who's been married 4 times, I guess we could give them 3 least of potentially bad decisions. But,
yes.
You know, when we go back, there's another study that I found online from Columbia University, and it found that we're bogged down. Now, one of the things in America is we sense that on certain things, not political parties, since we only have 2, and both really have, you know, their own issues at times, but as it relates to, well, let's go back to toothpaste. We have so many choices, and the choices are boundless, and of course the ways that they approach us to look at their products seemingly suggesting that this one is so much better than the other, and it really could bog us down. We're making, according to this study, 70 decisions a day, and
right.
They say that just the sheer number of them we have to make each day leads to a phenomenon called decision fatigue. And I wonder how much that plays into the fact that we're so busy making decisions about small things all the time that sometimes we let the big things slide.
Certainly, we are machines walking around, waking up and making a decision seemingly at every aspect of our lives these days. We have to put more thought, and maybe you can blame these studies, but you know, we're putting more thought into the way we live our lives, right? Whether we decide to eat that donut this morning or go for the banana instead, you know, whether we decide to sleep, you know, until 7:30 or wake up at 7 o'clock and maybe go for a 20-minute jog, you know, all these decisions we make, you know, we are weighing so much, and that's not even getting to work yet. Then you get to work and you have to decide how you're going to go about your work day. You know, you have to decide, you know, how you're going to go about your marriage and how you're going to anything, from the clothes you wear literally to the way you brush your teeth at night. I think that's spot on. We are making decisions, and we are taking so much information into account when we make these decisions, because I guess you could, you know, blame technology today. We have so much information at our fingertips that we're kind of forced to start thinking about the things we do even more and the consequences that come with them.
It's almost paralytic. I mean, there are times when I know I need a new computer, or you know you need a new car, but you dread going out and having to make those decisions, knowing how many different small decisions are involved. What's the size of the car? Do I want leather seats? Do I want this set of options and accessories? Do I take the extended warranty? And then, of course, everybody pushing you into different places in the process of that decision making. So sometimes you can't be paralyzed by the amount of choice that we have in our culture today.
Those kinds of decisions, I think, are probably the foundation for, going back to the regret study, those regrets that we have later on, because especially when we put so much thought into what decision we make, and, you know, it may be a decision that you really can't go back and change, you know, that house you bought, you can't give the house back next week and say, well, you know, this wasn't the right decision for us. Well, you can have the house back. You know, you're stuck with that house, you know, until it's feasible for you to sell it. You know, same thing with a car, same thing with the college you go to. You know, we have these decisions. Sometimes it can be very hard for folks to be very comfortable in the decisions they make. And I think that there's so much exposure from social media or you know, even the news, seeing how other people live their lives, that we can compare ourselves to other people. And I think that exacerbates that need to question, did we make the right choice? Is this really the best car for us? You know, I can speak for myself. I have two young children, and we have a minivan, and getting to that decision to make the minivan was an arduous process. But I love the minivan, and I'm glad I got it. But I was nervous about getting that minivan, and you know, I talked to many people. I compared, you know, my situation to many people, and talked to friends, and so I think we do that very often. I think we might look at how other folks are living their lives and judging ourselves and the decisions we make, when really we need to ask ourselves, are we happy just from the decision we made, and not thinking about those outside factors.
Yeah, I want to get back to that because I think that's a really important point. Steve Fink is with us from a group called studyfinds.org. And if you love these kinds of studies about health and lifestyle and the like, go to this site. The only thing I would say about a house now, I was reading where Amazon has the little tiny houses that you can purchase from them. I don't know what kind of packaging or what kind of truck it comes in, Steve, but it's about $19,900. And I guess if you don't like it now with that return policy, you can just bring it right back to Kohl's. So
yeah, that would be right. Just drop it off right in the front and say, sorry, your policy, that's the way it works, right?
Yeah, you package it up. But getting back to your point about regrets and social media, there are so many people who think that those folks who are living their lives out loud on social media are really telling you everything. And therefore, you look so common, and your life looks so stayed in comparison, because they're only showing you the vacation or the wonderful party that was thrown for them maybe once in their lifetimes. But you think, oh, you know, this is what happens to them regularly, and here I am at home reading a book or whatever it may be, which may be the better option anyway. But my point is, social media perhaps is really feeding into this sense that I regret that I'm not X, Y, or Z.
Exactly. I think you log on to Facebook and you see your friends, just to your point, you see your friends, you know, posting their vacation photographs, and you know, you think to yourselves, why can't my vacation look that happy, you know? Or maybe holiday time comes around and you see other folks posting photos of their family dinners or celebrations. You know, maybe you start having some introspection as to why your family is not as close-knit as, you know, someone else's. And that can be a really dangerous thing, because, you know, it can take you down that rabbit hole, I think, of regret, or of feeling that your life is not good enough, or that you've made a mistake, or that you're not living your life to the best of its abilities, and that's really sad when you see that. And we do have other studies on the site that have spoken to this kind of phenomenon of depression stemming from people being on social media, really hyper focusing on other people. Just like you said, it doesn't give the full picture. You know, it's very easy to log on to social media to see someone's Instagram account and see their family photographs, and every single one, of course, is going to look happy and picture perfect. And it may cause you to say, they look so perfect all the time. How are they so happy? And then ask yourself, why are we like that? But you're right. You don't see what's going on in that house, and you don't know about their turmoil. And I think, you know, every family, every person, you know, has their own battles that they have to deal with. And I think it does give you a false, you know, kind of a false picture of what life really is like, and that can be dangerous.
Now, the study that we're talking about was commissioned by the UK charity consortium Remember a Charity. And again, remind yourselves, those listening, that 4 out of 10 people in this study regret how they have lived their lives so far. And they talk about spending too much time at work and not traveling enough as being among the respondents' biggest regrets. I guess they should have just gotten a job that requires them to travel.
Exactly, right? That would have taken care of everything, right? Yeah, you know, I think a lot of those the regrets that they kind of focused on, or at least the ones that seem to be the big regrets, are probably the ones that you would have expected. I certainly wish that I studied abroad in college. I didn't study abroad. I certainly wish I did that. You know, I think things like that, you know, many of us can relate to the spending too much time at work, not spending enough time with our families. I think these are all things that at some point we realize that maybe we could be doing. But the beauty of those types of regrets, they're ones that it's never too late. And so it's kind of refreshing that those were the worst of the regrets.
The other common regrets among those surveyed included neglecting their health and not spending enough time with their family. All of these are of a certain thread. I wonder how many of these correlate really nicely with what you must do, because I've just kind of stumbled upon your site, when people do something looking at what they want to do for New Year's resolutions.
We've done some studies on resolutions. Yeah, I think when it comes to New Year's time, that is usually the time that we start thinking about the things we're going to do next year to kind of better ourselves. Usually health is probably the most popular resolution that we see. You know, we have had a prior study that I believe it said that people regret the actions that they've taken more than the inactions that they've taken when it comes to the short term. But in the long term, people wind up regretting their inaction, the things they didn't do when it comes to the long term. So, yeah, you know, we start off the year saying we're going to get on that treadmill every day, or we're going to wake up, you know, early in the morning, and those are our short-term goals. But I think so many of us wind up come week three of January kind of pushing those to the side and say, yeah, we'll do it next year.
It's interesting. I have a few other studies that I gleaned to have this conversation with you. And, of course, the not traveling more shows up everywhere. Mm-hmm. Not taking better care of your health shows up everywhere. Not spending enough time with our families everywhere. Working too much. Now, the one about not being a better parent, I mean, that's one where a lot of folks say, gee, I am going to be remembered by the next generation. And it's not going to be, oh, boy, what fun Dad was to be around all the time. It's going to be Dad was distracted or didn't pay enough attention or focused more on discipline than helping us to enjoy our lives or whatever it might be. And that's the one that really does seem where somebody kind of kicks themselves. And you do see a lot of parents and older children trying to find a new equilibrium as life goes on.
It's hard. I think that we, you know, as parents, you know, again, there is that looking to see how other people are living their lives and then saying, you know, I need to be better at this. I shouldn't be doing this. And I think we catch ourselves in those moments where, you know, our children are talking to us and what are we doing? We're looking at our phone or we're checking our email. You know, I know that I do that to my wife many times and you know, she doesn't hesitate to let me know, you know, that I'm not paying attention to her. So, you know, our kids should give us more, you know, more lip when we're not, you know, we're not being good enough, because I do think with all this technology around us, it is easy. Plenty of studies on distraction, of course, and I think it is easy for us to get distracted as well. And I think wishing we could be better parents, you know, we always want the best for our kids. I think, you know, we see certainly plenty of studies about working too much and being a workaholic, and I think all of that falls into it. You know, we work so much because we want to provide the best life for our children, and then 20 years later, we wish we didn't work so much. So it's hard. You know, you really have to be comfortable in knowing why you choose to have a certain lifestyle, and, you know, in being comfortable in knowing that you're working now, maybe because you have to have work this hard right now in order to give that life to your kids. Now, if you don't have to, if you are voluntarily sitting, you know, outside, you know, drinking a beer and, you know, reading a book and your kids are inside playing video games, yeah, you know, that's time that you don't get that back, and there is no excuse for that. You know, I think it kind of calls attention to those moments where you can recognize where you can make those changes. If you do feel like maybe I could be better, then maybe go and reflect on what is it that I can actively do to be better, and then go ahead and try it and make those changes.
Steve Fink, when we were talking earlier, we didn't really know in the study that we've been talking about what the ages were, but age is really an important consideration. We did a podcast with Jonathan Rauch, and he's the author of the book, The Hoopiness Curve, and he pinpointed that sandwich generation, and you had a study on your site finding that people are most miserable during the sandwich years. Now, those are high-pressure years, and he said, I think it ebbs at about 59, which is really unhappiness, and then happiness begins to kick in at 60 and over. And there's another study that you published. People over 60 are more content in life than all other adults. And in a sense, it makes sense that once you've stripped away some of the factors like work or, you know, just always looking to achieve and wanting that outside reinforcement of who you are, if you've come this far and you're comfortable with who you are, then you say, now it's all about me intrinsically and how I want to be remembered, what I want to do before all of this ends, and how I need to repair some of the things that perhaps I didn't get right along the road.
I think that's accurate. I think that, you know, the sandwich years, and even before, I think, you know, once you start a family, and if you don't have children, I think once you're kind of in, you know, those middle ages, those are the years we're making the most expensive decisions in our lives, whether you have children or not. You know, the house we buy, the cars we buy, where we send our children to school, whether we do public education or private education, where we go to college and or send them to college, excuse me. I think as the younger we are, we look at all the fancy bells and whistles that we can have, and we have to weigh whether or not we want to have them now or we want to wait. Me personally, I always look at, it makes sense to me that the after 60 years are the happiest, because to me, I always felt like retirement is like the grand reward of life. You know, I remember having a conversation with a friend who bought a really new nice car, and we were discussing. I said, I can't wait until, you know, the day I decide to get myself a nice car as well. And he said, well, why don't you do it now? And I said, well, because I look at retirement as the age to do that, because I don't know what's going to happen in these next, you know, 10, 20 years as my kids get older. I don't know, what my situation will be. And if I make a mistake now, then I won't have that opportunity come my retirement years. Now, when you get to that point of being 60 and you've settled down, you've saved your money, you've made all the right decisions, you feel good about those choices that you made, you can make those decisions without feeling as guilty or feeling as worrisome. And to me, that's kind of the grand reward, where you don't have to worry as much about those choices. And it seems like, to what we spoke at the very beginning of this conversation, thinking about the choices we make, you know, how they weigh on us and the consequences that can come from them, there are so many of those right now. So to me, it seems like it makes sense that those would be the best years of life.
The interesting thing is, Steve, I've reached that point, and I am very happy. But I actually, when I retired, though I'm still working, nobody really retires any longer. You just kind of pull back a little bit. But if you're lucky, like me, doing a podcast, having come out of television and radio all my life, this is an extension of that, but a much more relaxed one. I'm sitting here in my home in my shorts talking to you.
There you go, right?
At a radio studio at an appointed time and having to deliver 3 hours a day. But you really have to have a plan, because you really can get, a little frustrated in your own inability to find that new life in retirement, because many of us are creatures of habit. And I know I get up every morning saying, I've got to get some things done, because that was my whole life, being on time and being prepared and doing something. So you still have to prepare for that. But I want to bring us in the closing moments of our conversation to something that just as two guys talking, I think is really interesting. One of the other surveys that I looked at, the one from Columbia, they were looking at terminally ill patients reporting the same 5 regrets again and again. And I just want to run through them real quickly, and then we can chat it up a little bit. They wish they hadn't made decisions based on what other people think. And I think that's so important, because, you know, there's so many times that when you were younger, you really had to listen. What did my father-in-law think? Am I going to live up to what he wanted for his daughter, or whatever it might be? The second, they wish they hadn't worked so hard. So we've seen that in all the studies. They wish they had expressed their feelings more. They held back and they didn't tell someone perhaps how much they meant to them. They wish they had stayed in touch with their friends. Now, I've been really trying to reach out to a lot of folks during this period, and it's been great. But some don't reciprocate, even at this latter stage of life. They wish they had let themselves be happy. So those are the things that those who are terminally ill can teach us as they are ready to perhaps depart this earth. So maybe it has some value for all of us.
Those are certainly wise words. I mean, there's the book, The Five People You Meet in Heaven, which I believe is kind of a similar, you know, a kind of a similar premise in looking at life. But I think, yeah, you know, I mean, you think about that, a terminally ill person, that's someone who has no choice but to reflect back now, because now there is no opportunity to make those changes. That's when you do have to sit down and say, did I live my life, you know, the way I wanted to live my life? Certainly, you know, those are the people that we should be listening to the most, because, you know, at some point all of us are going to get to that point. You know, I think we have all this information. We have these studies. You know, we can laugh at them. We can mock them. They can seem so obvious, but they do kind of serve that purpose of helping us to make those choices so that we do live happier lives. And I think, you know, it is important to stop and ask ourselves those questions so that we don't wake up tomorrow and feel regretful, so that we do wake up tomorrow and say, I'm going to make this change. And I think, you know, having that reflection, having an introspection, and then finally, you know, being comfortable and being happy, because you mentioned comparing yourselves to other people or caring about what other people think. I think now that's probably more prevalent than ever, particularly because of social media. You know, we have to have that perfect photo when we post it on Facebook. We want people to give us likes. We feed off of that need of approval. You know, 20 years ago, no one was doing that. And it's interesting. And I kind of wonder, I mean, just thinking about it now, you know, did we think like that 20 years ago? You know, what were the studies saying 20 years ago, before Facebook existed? And, you know, there was no such thing as liking a photo, other than just someone showing you a photo and saying, hey, I like that.
I like it. Yeah. Well, let me go back to study finds one more time, and maybe I will leave you, who is listening to this podcast, with this thought. A survey that you shared with us, half of Americans consider themselves modern-day workaholics. I guess the other half aren't even participating in the work environment, because I think everybody considers themselves today under an incredible amount of stress in a very toxic workplace environment. But having said that, do your best to free yourself and make certain as best you can, and Steve, if you want to comment, that you really are doing what it is that you set out to do, or that you know was the path that was best for you, even if it may not remunerate you as much as something else. Maybe you can make that turn. It's never too late. So, Steve Fink, thank you so much for being with us. If somebody wants to go to your site, tell us where, how, and what they'll find.
Sure. So, as you mentioned, we are studyfinds.org. That's all you need to enter into your browser. You will find thousands of studies. Anything, if you are looking for just some advice, some suggestions, you know, some research, you can go in. You can search for any topic, anything from dieting to technology to sleeping habits. You know, we find that our food ones are often very popular. Things that, you know, that eating, there was one recently that eating peppers can red peppers can help prevent dementia. So things like that, you know, you can find all sorts of information on our website. And once you get there, I take no blame for how long you've spent sitting there reading study after study after study.
And by the way, that was not funded by the Green Pepper Society that we talked about earlier, not to be confused. This is a disclaimer.
Correct.
Steve Fink, a joy to talk with you today, and thanks so much for being part of America Trends.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate it.
America Trends podcast is part of the MHNR Network, mhnrnetwork.com.